listening to Creative Friction, a podcast for ambitious creatives and agency owners that are looking for honest insights on how to scale their business sustainably and profitably. Each episode, we dig into candid conversations about the most pressing topics in our industry and offer up insights and resources to inspire you to take action.
From talking about the latest and greatest in AI to unpacking how our industry can better represent and reflect our modern world, we're here to guide you on agency growth, marketing strategies, and how to make a meaningful impact as a creative entrepreneur.
Hello, and welcome back to Creative Friction, a podcast for creative entrepreneurs navigating the challenges of growing a business while staying true to their creative roots.
Each episode is recorded live so guests can join and ask questions that matter to them and their business.
I'm Madeline Reeves.
And I'm Jeff Mead, and today we're here to talk with Maribel Lara of the Sasha Group about how to truly support your small business clients as they build out their online presence through social media.
So I was lucky enough to meet Maribel a few months back at a Luminary event in San Diego, and she was absolutely on fire, just sharing all of her marketing insights with audience members and entrepreneurs. But when she's not teaching and speaking to an audience like that, with seemingly endless content questions and all the answers that she's got, she is the Senior Vice President and Head of Consulting at the Sasha Group, which is an agency that was built by Gary Vaynerchuk to focus solely on supporting small to mid-sized businesses with their marketing. So Maribel has an extensive background in marketing, media, strategic growth, organizational development, diversity and inclusion, and has worked with clients across almost every industry imaginable. She's deeply passionate about educating and mentoring companies that are looking to establish marketing strategies that lead to meaningful and measurable growth. My favorite thing about her, though, is that she's an absolute open book of ideas and answers. So do not hesitate to ask any burning questions you have today, because I know she's going to be more than willing to lend a helping hand. So thank you so much for joining us, Maribel. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks. I feel like that's the nice way of saying she's got a lot of opinions and it's happy.
I love it, though. Business owners need help, though, and this is an area where we know there's a lot of questions, so hopefully people will chime in with them today.
Love it.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. Maddie gave that really great intro, but just tell us, what are you working on these days? What does a normal day look like for you, or a normal week? You know, what goes on in your world right now?
Yeah, well, every day is completely different. So I recently celebrated my 9-year Vaynerversary. I've been in the Vayner world for over 9 years, and I kid that I've probably had like 5 or 6 different roles over the course of those 9 years. I would say the last 4 have been the most consistent because I've been hyper-focused on consulting offerings for small to mid-market businesses. So I think what's important for folks to understand is while we were born out of, you know, VaynerMedia was the first company in this before like the VaynerX holding company existed. Mm-hmm. And that's very much like a traditional agency that works mm-hmm. with Fortune 500 brands. When we started Sasha, we had in mind, Gary wanted to be able to work with some of the small businesses, the solopreneurs, which encompass the vast majority of his audience, right? The people that listen to him as an individual brand. And we weren't really set up to do that in the VaynerMedia world. So we had dabbled with some services, including a consulting offering called Mentors, now called Sasha Mentors Program. Mm-hmm. That was really it. What I do today really ladders back to what we saw as the need when we created Mentors. And it was the fact that when you're working with smaller businesses, it's not enough to just provide a marketing strategy, right? Because they don't have the kind of resources and the kind of leeway to be able to like spend $1 million on a TV spot and run it and see how that works, mm-hmm. right? Every dollar matters. Every ounce of time matters. You've got to be really smart about it. And so really, the smaller the organization, the more you have to also pay attention to like the business needs. Yeah. And so really, that sort of opened the door to, we wanted to be able to have more robust conversations about the business and how the marketing strategy laddered back to the business with these organizations that were coming to us, right? And so really what my day-to-day looks like is I work with the smaller of the clients that Sasha Group works with, right? We are a consultancy meets agency. on the agency side, we look very much like VaynerMedia does, right? Those are retainer relationships, mm-hmm. usually at least a year long. You know, we do media as well. So sometimes we are the creative and the media. We are full AOR, like doing mm-hmm. everything for some of these brands. Well, on the smaller side, we primarily focus on consulting because it's hard to justify having an agency on retainer,
right?
And so where we believe we can have the biggest impact is on business strategy, on marketing strategy, on helping you potentially build or restructure like your internal team to be able to execute upon those strategies, right? Like, we're not building strategy every day for a business.
Right.
We're typically setting a strategy at the beginning of the fiscal year, right? And then we're executing across that strategy over the course of the year. We're learning, right? We're adjusting. So we thought we could be an extension of teams as opposed to having to be the team that does mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. We can have a greater impact if we're teaching clients how to do it. Mm-hmm. So on any given day, it could be, you know, being in the weeds with laying out a strategy for a client. It could be designing a workshop where we're going to have conversations about like where we're going mm-hmm. so that we can get input from the client. Everything we do is set up that way. It's always meant to be collaborative because we want our clients to be able to learn from the process,
right?
Like, I'm not trying to create a system where they have to rely on us. I'm not trying to create a system where they need to come to me every 3 or 4 months mm-hmm. or every 6 months or every year. Like, I want them to learn how to do it. For me, mm-hmm. success looks like the client is able to do a lot of things on their own. Maybe they want to do advisory services with them and we hop on a call once a month.
Right.
Or we hop on a call on a quarterly basis. And we just become like an extension of who's thinking about things, because sometimes you're so close to it, you may not see it. And somebody externally asking some questions may, you know, shine a light on things you didn't see because you were way too close to it.
Right.
So that's it. So like day to day is conversations with clients. It's educational conversations. It's like thought-provoking conversations. It's making sure that my team is working on things. So we've now gotten big enough mm-hmm. that I can't be in the weeds on everything. So a lot of what I do is orchestrating and making sure the work is progressing, right? Like pushing my team and asking them the questions that are going to get more work and more thought-provoking like stimulus for our clients.
Right.
And it's also being part of the senior leadership team at Sasha and having a sense of what all of our needs are organizationally. So I very much play an internal comms and culture role, which isn't, people think about that and it's not clear how that ties back to the bottom line. But at VaynerX, we've had great success because we have great retention. Mm-hmm. So our leadership team, which is 8 people, I think collectively we've got over 60 years working for Gary.
Wow. Wow.
Crazy,
that's,
right?
That's fantastic. And that, I think that's a huge testament to not only the model working for clients, but the model working for your all's team. And I think, I mean, my personal opinion is like, one, just hearing you say all of this is super validating, because I serve in my consultancy, we serve a smaller base of clients. And I could not agree more with that comment of the area where you can actually make the most impact is on the business and marketing strategy side. Mm-hmm. But there is this kind of juggle or balance we have that is like, all the strategies in the world are fantastic, but if the client is not equipped to execute, or if they don't have the right team members in place to execute, that strategy is not really going to go anywhere. And I'm curious, I wanted to kind of ask you, like, how do you guys do that dance? Because like one of the things we've been doing a bit more of in our model in recent years, especially with social, is trying to help them either identify somebody they already have internally and train them up so that they can be the day-to-day executor and we're oversighting on strategy, or helping them hire somebody and being a part of that hiring process so that they have, because what I found, we did outsourced organic social for about 3 years as an execution. And it was the most impossible service to make a margin on, but it was also just a really frustrating client experience because we were asking them for pictures. We were asking them about an event they went through, things like the timing. And so I'm just curious, like, how do you find that harmony of being that, you know, external strategist, but also making sure that the clients have who they need in-house to get that strategy done?
So one of the things that I think is telling is that the first full-time hire I made on my team was a PhD in organizational psychology. And it went back to I felt the friction that the hardest part was execution. I've stolen this analogy from Gary, right? Like what we do in consulting is we provide a recipe. We provide what we think is the recipe, and we know it's delicious because right. we've made it, but we're not there when it's getting made. And so we have no control over they used cumin instead of coriander. Mm-hmm. They sauteed it for 10 minutes instead of the 5 minutes that we recommended. And so it's one is managing expectations with clients around like, listen, this is a recommendation. The success of this is highly reliant on your doing this. So before we even jump into this exercise, if I provide you with a strategy, what does your team look like? How are they currently occupying their time? And so it is very typical for us to include implementation of processes in our strategic recommendation. And so when we're gathering information, when we do what we call our deep dive before we do the research that leads to the strategy, we're asking, what is the team currently, like, what are the roles that the team currently consists of? What are the tasks that fall under those folks? Very important question. What else are they responsible for? Because if you don't ask that question, you may not realize that these four people who you are told are on the marketing team are also on the customer service team or are also on the sales team. Mm-hmm. And if you actually add up the time, you've got four people on this team, but each of them only have 25% of their time in a given week to dedicate to marketing.
Totally.
So what you're really telling me is you have a full-time one person if we add up, right? Like how I approach developing a strategy when that's what your team structure is going to be really different than if you had four dedicated people. Understanding the team, understanding the processes, understanding even the organizational culture, what's rewarded here? So and this wasn't just specific to consulting. One of the things we found in our first year at Sasha was we would ask clients like, okay, what do you have? Do you have like a brand book? Right. We were using, we have that. We have all these brand assets. We have a ton of assets for you to use. And then you would go into it and they had like 20 product photos. And they didn't have an articulated mission, vision, or values or articulated RTBs. The brand book consisted of a logo and a font. And that was right. And so you had very little to go off of. And so what we have gotten so much better at, and we just constantly are trying to get better at, is like that onboarding and that diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But that diagnosis, even before we sign an agreement with a client, because otherwise you might be selling them the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm. Right? Totally.
I really, it's all about the questions you ask and sort of digging deep. It is not uncommon for us to be like, hey, I know that you came to us and you want to jump into a campaign, but we don't have enough to work with right now.
Yeah.
But what we're identifying is you need to establish your brand fundamentals, or you're actually going to need to build up your team, because I can do this for you and it's going to get you a lot of attention, but you're not going to be able to do anything with the attention that comes your way because you're not set up to succeed internally. So like, it's also being okay saying no to a project.
Right, right.
Because the client is like, nope, we want to jump straight into the campaign. Totally hear you, right? We're not the partner for you.
It's interesting because when I think about clients who want to work with you, and I really love your recipe example, I would almost think they wanted you to bake the cake and not wanting the recipe to the cake. So what kind of pushback have you gotten from folks when they're saying, oh, wait a minute, I thought you guys were going to do everything?
Yeah. I think that's got to get established from the very beginning. I'm super honest with people. I'm just like, listen, we bake the cake on the agency side of things. This is what you've told me your budget is. I'm giving you the recommendation based on what your budget is. Like, you can't afford us baking the cake. And you just have to be okay with that, right? That is the service. But there's also, I think, helping people understand, like, look, I think there's tremendous flattery in that you like acknowledging that I love that you're coming to us and you want me to do it. I can have a significant impact for you in terms of the strategy, but it's actually more important that you're able to do this day in and day out. Mm-hmm. I'm super candid around like cost. I tell them, I'm like, look, what you would pay us in a monthly retainer, you could hire somebody mm-hmm. full time that gives you, you know, 35 hours a week and only works on your brand. Or you can pay me a retainer and you're still not getting a dedicated. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like I go yeah. back to business numbers. I'm like, from a business perspective, it doesn't make sense for you to have me bake the cake. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like from a business perspective, it makes more sense for you to hire an in-house baker.
Yeah. Well, and but what I also think that comes to the table, it surprises me, and I'm curious how this tracks for you, is like the number of times a prospect will come to a conversation and be like, you know, I'll say that budget question and they'll be like, I have no idea what good marketing costs. Mm. And granted, let's be honest, like, you know, in every services space, there's a gradient, right? There's the Fivers of the world and there's, you know, the top tier agencies and there's everything in between. But I think what has surprised me so continuously is how little people think they're going to have to spend to get it all done. And I love that, going back to this notion of like, well, what does it cost for you to have a full-time hire or more? Because there's also these circumstances, I feel like, where scopes, you get into a certain bracket and it's like, it's actually less for the agency to do the work. I've had that in my model where we worked with a lot of technology companies for a while, and compared to them having to staff up their team for a new initiative or a dedicated channel or something like that, I was like, I've already got people with expertise in this area and we're going to cost you 2 headcount when you probably would need 5 people, because we've got a copywriter, we've got a designer, we've got, you know, an ad specialist, social, all the different pieces. And so I do think there's like this kind of gradient there for sure. But I also think that small businesses these days, there's so much that a well-trained marketing hire can do because of the tools that are available that didn't even exist 5 years ago. So I'm curious, like, do you guys get in the weeds there and do a lot of training sometimes with your clients' employees?
Yeah. So education has been part of our offerings from the very get-go. We've got an educational offering called the 4 D's, and we launched it under VaynerMedia. And the whole idea was that people would pay to come spend a day with us, and we would take them through our approach to digital marketing, and we would address content creation, paid media, right? Like personal branding. Gary would spend some time with the group and answer their business. Usually is a business question, often marketing, but very often just like business in general. And we continue to offer that program. We're going through a renewal of the curriculum, right? Mm-hmm. So everything's, the landscape has completely changed. And so it's time that we revisit the curriculum on there. The expectation isn't that people walk away from that knowing exactly how to do it, but that we're opening their eyes to how they need to be thinking about digital marketing in particular. You know, for us, it's a win if we can even convince some of our agency side clients to come and do a 4Ds, because we think it sets them up for how we think and what they're going to see from us or what they're going to hear from us over the course of that relationship. So I think it's impossible to do what we do successfully without there being some level of education. So I think it's also like, build that into your kickoffs with new clients. What is that kick? What does the onboarding look like? Helping clients understand, like, this isn't you sign on and immediately we're creating for you. Like there's a build-up process right to that. So even just education about how the work is going to be approached, right? Things like, especially with smaller businesses, you've got so many people who don't come from a marketing background, or maybe they do come from a marketing background, but it's a traditional marketing background, or, you know, like there's no room for assumptions. Assuming that a client understands exactly what you mean when you use certain phrases, mm-hmm. from the basics of when I hear a client use a word like marketing strategy, which mm-hmm. I've thrown out a mm-hmm. bunch of times here, saying to them, when you say marketing strategy, what does that mean to you?
Yeah.
When you say return on investment, what does that mean to you? Making sure, not making assumptions that we mean the same thing when we use the same language, but really like verifying that making sure that they understand what the processes entail. Why do things take the amount of time that they take, right? Why isn't it as simple as jumping into designing for a client or writing copy for a client? What are the things that we have to understand to do that in a way that's going to be impactful for you? So yeah, I think education in just the fundamentals, if we can formalize it, right? Like the beauty of technology is we can record ourselves using something like Loom,
right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And the onboarding process, and that's the video we share with all of our clients. We just have to make the effort of getting that in place at the beginning, but then it benefits us across the board. And maybe we renew that once a year based on the things we're seeing tweaked. Like wherever you can create process, paperwork, video that's going to meet the clients where they are is going to make it a better experience for the client and for you.
Mm-hmm. 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 Now, I'm curious, when you say you guys work with smaller clients, what does an ideal client look like for the Sasha Group? Mm-hmm. What size is that?
It really depends on whether we're talking consultancy or agency.
Okay.
So again, agency, we're talking household brands, right? So we've worked with Bojangles, we've worked with NASCAR, we work with Hain Celestial. So if you want to see some cool stuff our team is doing, everybody's talking about Celestial seasonings on TikTok. So go see what we're doing with the Sleepy Time Bear there. Right. So we're working with some like Utz, like we work with a few of the Utz brands. So we're working with some very well-known brands on the agency retainer side, and those are going to look like agency retainers. Mm-hmm. When I say small, we run the gamut, right? So we have clients that are running paid media with us that are still doing our minimum paid media for our SMB launch kit is $5,000 a month spend plus another like six in fee where we're creating the ads for you. So we're talking $11,000 a month just for paid media and the ads associated with it. And you got to do a minimum of 4 months with us. That's still significant.
Right,
that's
right.
Small. On the smaller side, we have advisory services where clients are able to buy 10 hours of time with us. And the entry level cost is like $450 an hour for 10 hours, right? And we can, in 10 hours, we can tackle 1 to 2 critical areas and provide you resources. That's more hands-on with the client. We're giving you homework. We're giving you feedback on what you're doing. We're teaching you how to do it. Mm-hmm. There are no like fancy decks that come with that. And then on a project-based, our project-based consulting offering starts at $25,000, and we can tackle something substantive. We can develop a digital marketing strategy for you. We're working with a client right now, and we're evaluating their marketing team to make sure it ladders up to what their business objectives are, and we'll be making recommendations on gaps in skills or gaps in roles based on what it is they're trying to achieve, right? Because they built a department that was, it grew as the needs came across. It was like, oh, we're doing a website. We need to hire a website person.
Right, right.
We need more photography. We're going to hire a photographer. So it was sort of like piecemeal reactive. Mm-hmm. And now they're just like, all right, we need to take a step back and look at this holistically. And what does our marketing team of the future look like? And so they've enlisted us in doing that, right? So those kinds of projects start at $25,000 and then go up incrementally based on like how many deliverables or how many areas they want us to look at as part of that.
Gotcha.
I love kind of hearing all of these different scopes of services because I'm like, man, this sounds like a lot of fun. Like I'm like, these all sound like really, you know, fun clients to work with and fun projects to work on. And I know from talking more about your background, you know, one of the areas you guys help clients a lot with is social media. And I think that is, you know, the area that I see the most overwhelm come through for small business owners, because it's a blessing and a curse for a lot of them. It's this amazing tool resource, you know, never before in the history of running a business could you have the potential to open up and reach an audience for free in many cases.
Yep.
But owners they struggle to navigate. They're like, I don't know which platforms I should be posting on. What strategy should I do? There's so much to learn in this space. And so I'm curious to know, in the landscape you're working in right now, what platforms do you guys spend most time on for your clients? And obviously it varies depending on their industry and things like that. And how have you really, you know, I know your career is like, you've grown up with social media marketing, your career has evolved with social media marketing. And so how is the way that you guys are supporting clients in the social media space also grown over time?
Yeah, look, I think the key change has been that it's a far noisier landscape, right? Yeah. We went mm-hmm. from the start of my career, I met my husband in business school and we fell in love and we knew we were going to be together. And he was convinced that he was going to support me for the rest of my life because I had this crazy pipe dream of working in this thing called social media marketing. That worked out.
This radical new industry.
and it was, right? Like, because when I started, it really was crazy that I was in business school 2007 and 2009. Mm-hmm. And I would literally meet people.
It's a great time to graduate business school, too.
Oh, my gosh. We won't even go there, Jeff. We won't go there. We were the class that got forgotten. They just skipped over us. But there was definitely the landscape challenges, right? But there wasn't a class that you could take in marketing mm-hmm. that even spoke to mm-hmm. social media. Mm-hmm. There was one course in the graduate marketing program on digital marketing. So very early stages. So we went from at the beginning, all the questions were like, but what's the ROI on social media? Nobody questions that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's pretty accepted that we can achieve business objectives utilizing social media. It's pretty accepted that you're not really marketing if there you don't have a digital strategy that incorporates social media marketing. Where I think the biggest hurdles are folks are amazingly still treating it like a megaphone. Mm. Folks are still treating it like a billboard or an ad in a print magazine. That's crazy to me because we've long proven that it was always about the fact that it opened up a dialogue or the opportunity for a dialogue right. with consumers. And it's crazy to me that people still aren't using it in that way. The added challenge that we have today and why we've even had to pivot how we approach social media is that there is so much noise that just being active on social is not enough. So if anyone is a listener of Gary, what you have heard him saying over the last like 8 months is he's talking about strategic organic content to differentiate it from just organic content. Mm-hmm. And what he means by the strategy is it's very important to create content in the context of what is actually happening on these platforms and what is relevant in culture at mm-hmm. this given moment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so really what that means is if you want to be the best of the best when it comes to organic content, this idea of creating a calendar of social media content a month in advance doesn't work on its own, right? Like it's not going to be the primary driver of success. Right. I get why we do it, right? Like we know that there's certain stuff we're going to want to talk about. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we go into June knowing that it is Pride and knowing that that ties back to our values and the things we want to talk. So we can plan that stuff. But the stuff that's really important requires us to be listening and paying attention to what is happening on these platforms and what matters to the people we're trying to connect with mm-hmm. and meeting them in the middle. Right. Like, so now for those companies that have still been using social media as a megaphone, that is going to be even less successful than it's been. Like, it mm-hmm. hasn't been successful. It's going to be even more disastrous. Just nobody's going to see your content mm-hmm. because you're not actually responding to how these platforms are changing. So, your question was also, what platforms should people be on? Mm. Still get tons of pushback on TikTok. What I will say is this, is all of the platforms are following TikTok's lead.
Mm.
Oh, really?
Well, think about it, right?
Yeah, like the video, short form video, super punchy.
Vertical video really got TikTok. If we look at Reels, they look mm-hmm. like TikToks.
It's a copycat. Right? People are just reposting.
But the other thing you'll see is just like the behavior on TikTok, duetting, remixing, using other people's content as a prompt for creating our own content. Mm. Again, that's the behavior you're starting to see on Instagram. What the news tells us is that like you're going to start seeing video responses in Instagram the way that you're seeing them in a TikTok mm-hmm. environment. So whether or not you can believe that your audience isn't on TikTok, which I don't buy, right? So you can tell me that at a minimum, you need to be on that platform consuming content so that you understand what's culturally relevant right now, and also how people are utilizing social media. You cannot avoid video. You just can't. Right? Like if you're not making vertical video as part of your digital marketing strategy, that's the first thing you've got to fix. And you got to get super comfortable with it and you have to get fast at it. The other thing is brands are still hyper-focused on what it looks like. It's amazing to me that I still have to go into rooms. Maddie, you probably heard me say like, hey, I'm going to blow your minds. Like nobody looks at your freaking grid. Right. Like I was on we had two intercompany calls this week. And on the first one, Gary was just like, these brands need to wake up to the fact that follower count doesn't even matter. Because if you're actually looking at behavior in social media platforms, people aren't following accounts anymore. They're engaging with the content. They don't feel the need because the best of the best content is going to get fed to them. They don't need to follow anybody. You want to see, you want to get in front of people, you need to make good content. You can't rely on people following you and automatically getting fed your content. That's not going to work anymore.
I'm so interested in when you're telling a corporate client that their follower count doesn't matter, right? Like that seems, that's mind-blowing. Like
what do they say? How do they respond?
It's a friction, right? What we know matters is, are people saving your content? Are they sharing your content? Are they commenting substantively?
Engagement,
But even within engagement, those types of engagement matter more than likes. Right? A view is not the same. So one is getting them to understand that engagement matters most, that there are certain types of engagement that are more valuable. Getting them to understand that it needs to be more about the pieces of content. And so we talk about finding right. And the only way we can find right is more reps, more at-bats. And so that means more content creation. And so then it's also pushing them on, listen, if we plan a content calendar and it's like one post a day, we're not going to learn much across one post per day. We need to be posting multiple times per platform per day. But when we say post, that means remixing. It means duetting. It means engaging. We have to engage in this community that exists on this social platform, not just engage on our own stuff.
Yeah, that last piece is so important because similar to you, it blows my mind how few people are still using it as a way to do market research. That's my favorite thing about the power I feel like my team has in terms of social these days. You know, if we worked with a direct to consumer brand, for example, and one of their things that they did was we took a play out of like the Skims playbook. And so that we would tease a product, we would do a product launch. And then, you know, we would, as we were starting to kind of gear up for the next product launch, particularly color for them was like a really big thing. And so there would only be a limited run of a certain color or a certain style, but they had never even considered like, oh yeah, all those Instagram followers you have, let's ask them what colors they want. You know, what do you want to buy? So that they had pre-orders and could not only be like, great, we've got this book revenue, we can afford the production run, but then also they had information about the volume they needed to produce as well. And so for me, I'm like, there's this whole other side of social, which is using it as this active conversation, this active research of your audience to be able to build better products. And I'm obsessed with that. I'm really big into product-led growth. And I just think that if you're not talking to your consumers in that way via social media, you're really, really missing the mark.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Listening to people, again, every room that I go to that I speak, and they're just like, but how do I know? And I'm like, have you asked? Right? Like there are these awesome like poll features question features. How do I know what to create content about? How about you ask your followers what they want to hear about? Right? Like you're doing a podcast. How about you ask them what guests they'd like to see on the show? You're launching new colors. You've narrowed it down to three. How about you let your community vote on which one? right? Yeah. And maybe it was tied across all three. So you're like, F it, we're going to launch all three, right? Because you know what demand is, you know what the interest is. I still think for the most part, people are like barely scratching the surface on what is feasible. But that all goes back to they're not actually spending time in the platforms.
Yeah.
You've got this amazing toolbox mm-hmm. at your disposal, and you have no idea what's even possible because you're not playing around with it. Personal brand can be super powerful. I create a bunch of content, not enough for like Instagram. I'm not trying to become the most popular personal brand. I go in and I do it because I'm trying to encourage my clients to use these tools. Then I can't be on a call telling them like, hey, you should use the green screen functionality and I've never tried it.
Mm. Yeah.
I actually have to, it's not an absolute requirement, but I don't understand how you do the job we do without consuming content and understanding what people are doing. So I'll give you a really great example of observation, right? Like I think every brand manager, every CEO of a small company trying to grow something, again, if you're only going to like watch on one platform, watch on TikTok, because everybody else is watching them, like all the other platforms are watching them. But we have a person on our team, I'll shout out Sydney Nichols, who had this observation. She saw some influencers and she was looking at they were not posting about their nails, but she noticed that she was seeing a bunch of people with a lot of followings with no manicured nails, what she called naked nails. Mm-hmm. So she literally took two snippets of influencers holding something. You could see their hand on the screen. And then she was like, she jumps in on the video and she's like, I'm declaring this naked nail summer. Look at this influencer. Look at this influencer. Like, I don't know about you, but I'm tired. My nails are in rough shape because of all these gel manicures. So unless it's a special occasion, I'm declaring it naked nail summer. She had gotten, I think last we checked, she had gotten like over 100,000 views on that.
Wow.
Because she was, because she had an observation. Because yeah. She was just consuming content. Mm-hmm. And something struck her. And mm-hmm. she was like, let's test this out. Mm-hmm. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
That's no different than what brands need to be doing.
Well, and then you have this potential to set a trend by like seeing it as it's happening. We had another client who we loved watching her TikTok account grow. She started it during the pandemic. And she started it as a joke because she's an accounting professional. And she noticed kind of this trend of not actually qualified financial experts on TikTok, like giving bad tax advice, basically, and being like, you should hire your children, build a trust and hide all your money there, like all this crazy shit. It was just like making her lose her mind. And so she set up a profile and started duetting and just being like, here's all the reasons this is completely wrong. And like, just like, and she's a super gorgeous girl. She's, you know, but like she was just like roasting people and like, yeah. and coming at them with like hard tax code facts. So basically, and she didn't at the time have a hard set strategy. She was just like, I was just on TikTok nonstop during the pandemic and it was pissing me off that people were getting the wrong information. And overnight she grew to like 40,000 followers. And then we helped her build a whole funnel on the back end that now she's getting small business clients out of what started as her just kind of rebutting, you know, things that she yeah. was seeing on the internet. But I think that that's also the potential of this kind of model of taking content and using it as a jump point because the conversation's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Right. I think that's the key. The conversation is happening. People are already on these platforms. You can be part of the conversation or not.
I've got to be honest. I hate big banks. I hate what they do with our money and all the insane fees they charge us for basically no reason. So when it came time to pick a business banking platform, I knew I needed to find one that actually cared about small businesses and aligned with my core values. That is why I chose Relay.
Relay is a no-fee online business banking and money management platform that helps small businesses take control of their cash flow and get crystal clear on what they're earning, spending, and saving. What most small businesses don't consider is how big of an impact money management can have on their day-to-day financial clarity. With Relay, business owners can bank with no account or overdraft fees with no minimum balance required, issue up to 50 virtual or physical Visa debit cards, send payments and deposits via ACH and wire, Integrate banking with accounting software like QuickBooks Online and Xero, and so much more.
As the CEO of a small business, I love how dedicated Relay is to helping small business owners like me understand exactly how much they're earning, spending, and saving, and consider them one of the keys to helping Fearless Foundry grow and manage our money with ease. You can check out Relay by visiting creativefriction.com/relay and apply for an account in less than 10 minutes.
It's so interesting that example you gave, Maddie. I was thinking the question I was going to ask you, Maribel, is are your clients all B2C or are any of them B2B?
We have several that are B2B. So when I say I've worked in a bunch of industries, we have a client that is in the manufacturing space and they manufacture tools and products for dental labs. So that's right.
Like super niche. Very specific.
Yeah. So we do work with B2B brands as well. And you're probably guessing those are some of the harder clients to work with, right?
Because
breaking them of their habits. The question we get all the time is like, but I'm in B2B. And I go, are there people that work at those businesses that you're trying to work with? And the answer is inevitably yes. Mm-hmm. Right? Are those people on social media? Yeah, they are. Like at the end of the day, we're trying to connect with people. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get on people's radar, mm-hmm. right? Like if you're a B2B business, then LinkedIn should definitely be part of your platform strategy because people are showing up looking for businesses to partner with. But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be on TikTok.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the B2B strategy on TikTok, I think, is really interesting. It's something I'm starting to tap into with a couple of our clients. But I love that notion of bringing it back to like, but what about the people? Because I think that that's one of the biggest mistakes that brands make is, you know, and I'll say that sometimes I feel like us as marketers, we perpetuate this a little bit because we'll be like, let's envision your ideal client or like, let's build an avatar. Or let's like craft, you know, this kind of picture of your audience. Then people kind of forget you're just trying to like reach one person at a time. And like, ideally you'll reach a lot of them, but then we've got to remember this is a human to human interaction. And I think that's why like the content I see that's trending and doing so well, it's the infotainment, it's humor. It's not lost on me. And this is one that I'm like, I still don't know what to do with it because I've always sworn like I will never dance on the internet. My top performing reel to this day is a spontaneous video I took with me and my son dancing in our kitchen. Clearly, there's something that we're craving as a culture, as a society, to connect with each other in this way. And I think that people don't realize that because they're just caught up in like, I've got to reach the audience or I've got to represent. Right. Or like you said earlier, Maribel, I'm just going to get on my megaphone and talk about how awesome our brand is. So I'm curious, I guess where I'm going with this is like, how do we make social media more human? Do you think that there's something there where people want something that is more organic and authentic? Because what I've noticed in our practice over the last 5 years is everybody wanted to figure out influencer strategy. Everybody wanted super polished content. Everybody was like, how am I going to hire a production team? And I don't think that's what we want anymore. And I think that actually makes the barrier to entry like a lot lower for people to just, we've all got one of these, pick it up and start filming stuff.
Yeah, I think it's the human, right? The humanity in it. It's the emotional connection in it. The world is heavy.
Yes.
There's just a lot of stuff going on that's super heavy. And I think people are looking for something that supports them during these heavy times. I think everybody loves being seen, feeling seen, feeling heard. We love feeling like we're in company. It feels good to celebrate, for me as a Latina, it feels good to celebrate Latinx cultural successes. Mm-hmm. While I don't know Carol G and I don't benefit from her record deal, it is badass that she signed the deal that she did this week, right? Where she owns her masters. That's freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I don't benefit it from it whatsoever, but that's an awesome thing.
Right.
When I see, I love all of the like things that make me laugh. We're looking for things to like pick us up.
Mm-hmm.
ideally. Sometimes we get into these rabbit holes that aren't so great, but in an ideal world, we're all creating content that makes other people feel good, that makes us feel good, that shows people who we are. Like, I think if we can keep that in mind, like, it's not to say that you're in business to make money. I get it. You know what? Your business is going to do better when you create actual connections with people. One example of how I live that in our day-to-day, I told you, we meet with clients and I'm like, don't spend your money with us. I'm going to give you some free tips. I looked at your website or I looked at your social, like, here are five things that I think you can do that are going to have an immediate impact for you. Go do those. You don't need me right now. Go do that. You're not maximizing all of the things that you can do on your own. Why am I okay with that? I'm okay with that because at the end of the day, I prioritize doing the right thing by that client. That's actually a value of ours by an organization. Because I also know that if we do right by our, by even, that's not even a client. If we do right by people from the second we meet them, then we're starting to create a positive relationship. And 5 years from now, when they do have more revenue, and it does make sense for them to work with a consultant or to work with an agency, my hope is that we're going to be on the short list, right? Because we did right by them in our first interaction. And it happens. Man, I had, we're into our fourth year, and I just had somebody reach out to us that worked with us in 2019. They were one of our first consulting clients, and they're back. This year, I've had people come back to me, and they're like, hey, you gave me this proposal 2 years ago. I'm ready now. Can we, like, restart that conversation, right? And so I think it's, you have to keep the big picture in mind. If we're hyper-transactional at the beginning, yeah, that might result in one transaction right now. But what you should really be looking for is a long-term relationship. And the long-term relationship comes from, like, giving a shit in terms of how people feel about the interaction. It's the long-term growth, the long-term strategy doesn't come from being hyper-focused on the transaction in this moment. It comes from, like, being hyper-focused on building a relationship over time.
I love it. I love it. I love how this has been like a masterclass in social media. Absolutely.
And client strategy and client relationship too.
What I'm really interested in is you've been Sasha Group 4 years, celebrating nine years. So I'm curious, what have you learned about yourself in those 9 years? Because, you know, I've done a bunch of research on you. I know you have an educational background. So in this space, what have you learned about yourself?
I think it's reinforced some things for me, right? So I was in my mid to late 30s when I came to Vayner. And it was, the tone was set from the time that I was hired. They really set me up. One of my first bosses, I had two bosses when I started because I worked on two different accounts, really set me up to, like, test my limits, but know that I had a support network. And so one of the biggest learnings for me was that you reach a certain point where you don't know what the answer is. There isn't a clear answer. And so that means you need to test and you need to be okay to fail sometimes. And so I think that the biggest lesson that I've learned in this stretch of my career was, like, getting comfortable with, like, not always getting it right. That goes into my whole thing. Madeline, we were chatting before we hopped on. Like, I go in and I do these AMAs essentially for an hour and a half. I have no idea what questions are going to be asked my way. And the reason I'm successful at doing that is because I'm okay with not knowing the answer. I'm okay saying, like, you know, I don't have an answer to that question, but I'll tell you what, like, you've got my email address. We can follow up afterwards. I can ask some people on my team. I can do some digging and we'll get you the answer. And we move on. Over this stretch of my career, like, I've just become more comfortable with that. And that was possible because I was set up to, you know, I was told it wasn't about getting right. It was about trying. It was about having a sound rationale for why I was going to approach something a certain way. And so for me, it's also been about, like, I flourished in that kind of environment. And so the thing I strive to do, and I have strived to do, you know, with the various size and types of teams that I've worked with, is to create that kind of environment for them. It's one of the biggest lessons, I think one of the best ways that Gary's a role model is he is the person talking to CEOs we interact with. And he's like, at the end of the day, it's my fault. And I think that kind of ownership, he's a wonderful role model of that. And I take that ownership on my team, right? Like the first time I have a challenge with someone, like that's my fault. Mm. So let's have a conversation about how I can better support you. What could I have done differently in this? And role modeling that for the team so that there's accountability on all fronts. It's not productive when we just point fingers. So amazingly, I would say, while, yeah, I've learned a ton around keeping fresh on what's changing in the digital landscape, most of the valuable stuff I've learned is about like interacting with other people, is about building really great company culture, because that is a critical component of success. It's not just the stuff that we do. It's like, who do we have that's there to roll up their sleeves and do the work with us. Mm-hmm. And that only success in that area only comes from creating a culture that people want to stay in. Mm-hmm. In an industry that has an average turnover of like 1 to 2 years,
right?
Like we're well beyond that. And that's a testament to how much we value that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not only that turnover with, you know, your team, but turnover with clients too, right? Like we all know in this room, how often in the qualifying process does the client say, you know, I was burned by such and such agency, or they said this is going to happen and, you know, it didn't, or, you know, yada, yada, yada. And so I think that the most important thing we can do as strategists and as marketers is to really bring that human-centric, bring that relationship-centric approach to the way that we are connecting with clients. Because at the end of the day, it might seem at the surface that the goal is to make as much money as possible or whatever. But when you dig a little deeper with them to understand, you know, what has been the obstacles to success before, or what are the things that they are nervous to try and the product isn't there, you know, or whatever those pieces are that are the actual roadblocks. Cause I also think there's a lot of people who, like Jeff and I did an episode on red flags when qualifying clients. And one of our number ones was like, they blame all the failures on the past marketing team. Like, it's like, I didn't do anything wrong. It was all those crap marketers I hired before. But I also think that's how we can illuminate the value we provide for clients. Because the thing is that people don't come to our doorsteps typically going, I really need somebody to sit with me and unpack and teach me and give me strategy. You know, they come because they're like, I want a website. I want social. I want ads. And you know, we can do those things, but the deepest value we can provide is in that relationship, so at least in my opinion.
Yeah, our president, James Orsini, puts it really phenomenally. He says, we're not here to be order takers. We're here to be maitre d's, right? And the distinction is that the maitre d' is like, they don't ask you what you want. They're like, so what do you gravitate towards? Like, what are the things you like? What are the things you don't like? And they make a recommendation based on their expertise. Mm-hmm. And so if we're doing our job right, like we're functioning more like maitre d's as opposed to servers and taking straight orders.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think that also changes the power dynamic with the client too. Because oftentimes, and hopefully, you know, you can convert them or you don't have them in the first place, but oftentimes clients come to the table thinking, I'm going to tell you what to do. And for me, the best clients come to the table and we listen for this in the qualifying conversation of, look, I'm an expert in my product or my company or this industry, but I don't know about marketing. That's why I want you to come in. And then the best moments are when they're like, and now can you teach me? Right?
Yes. Yeah. If you're clear on what you want and you just want somebody to execute, then hire freelancers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Like then write your own brief and like get it done. What do you need me for?
Mm-hmm. It's been great. Any projects you're working on that you want to plug, let our audience know how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, I would say I would love for people to watch, and we're going to be announcing some stuff probably like for a second half of the year. I teased earlier on the episode that we are updating the curriculum for our 4Ds program. We're moving that from being more seminar style to being more workshop.
Cool.
And so we're going to be developing pre-work that participants in that one-day program need to be doing so that we can provide them with more value before they even walk in the room and like have have more in-depth conversations in that room. And if folks want to learn how to approach strategic organic content, if they want to learn like what we've seen, what we believe works from a business development background, from paid media. And then we're also going to have a fourth module that's focused on like what's relevant now. And that's going to be looking at what we're seeing happening with the platforms, what we're seeing happening with technology, right? Like, mm-hmm. So if we were hosting that 4Ds today, we would probably talk about like the implications of AI, both from an efficiency perspective and marketing perspective. So yeah, so we're gearing up to have some more hands-on conversations and have greater impact with the folks that are participating in that. So we're hoping to secure 2 dates for the end of the year. So that'll get announced on our website, and we'll tease that up. So if folks even want to just follow me on LinkedIn, that'll be a good way to get an early sense of when those come. We have max 12 people in each of those sessions. Oh, wow. So there will only be 24 spots this year if we're able to lock in 2 dates with Gary. And in a given year, we're only going to do it 4 times. And so that's one that people are going to want to move on very quickly, because it's limited.
That is limited.
I love that you're going to do it workshop style too, though. Jeff has been working on some workshop stuff, and we've just had a lot of conversation behind the scenes this year about the joy that comes from getting people in the room together. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, all this technology is a gift. You know, we can all each record from our individual locations. But I just think, you know, in the same way when I met you and one question starts another question, you know, magic happens when you can get people in a room together like that. So I love that you guys are running it workshop style. I think that's going to be so powerful.
Yeah, it started as in person, and we're able to do that again. Like, we had done it virtually during the pandemic. But to your point, when you can shut off every distraction and just be in the room, be present, be, you know, sharing space and sharing energy with a smaller group of people, like, we can't argue that impact.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's great. Jeff, I was going to do you. What do you got going on?
Let's see. Well, you know, like you briefly just mentioned, working on the financial workshop for agencies. So that's kicking off, and it's been great. It's great just kind of being in the same space with people. And, you know, when you're working on numbers with people, it's really hard to do that virtually, right? There's so many questions, and it's such a personal discussion. So, that's fun. That's fun that's kicking off. And what about you, Madeline? Any projects?
I got 2. I'm really excited. We're doing a networking event next Wednesday for female founders. There's a LinkedIn event that we can put in the show notes afterwards if people want to sign up. Got like 100 plus female founders that have registered so far. Nice. So I just noticed, you know, there's a huge opportunity right now. I think I love being a connector. And so whenever I can be like, you know, and I realized, I was like, man, I'm connected to all these amazing female founders, but I haven't done enough matchmaking. I haven't done enough of like, hey, you need to know her. And so that we're doing that event next Wednesday. It's called Uplift. I'm really excited about that. And then Jeff and I have had a little fun behind the scenes project that I think we're going to finally start sharing with people. We had an idea when we started this podcast to do a playlist for our audience. I'm a big believer of the importance of having a great like get shit done playlist. Mm-hmm. And so we've been building these, we're calling them creative flow playlists. And so we're going to start sharing those in the next couple weeks with our audience as well. And I'm also really excited for our next episode. I feel like Maribel, you teased us up for it so perfectly. Our next episode is going to be talking about like pipelining and how do you bring, you know, good clients in the fold and things like that. And so, you know, that's an area where we know a lot of agency owners have been struggling a little bit this year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited for that conversation also.
Amazing. Well, I'll be watching for the launch of those things.
Yes.
Yeah. Perfect. I want to thank you all for tuning in. This recording will be available on LinkedIn after we wrap up, and we'll be live again in 2 weeks.
You can also tune into all of our previous episodes on all your favorite streaming platforms, and keep an eye out for this month's episode, which will drop on streaming platforms the first Friday of the next month. And as always, you can go to creativefriction.com to learn more about the podcast. Thank you, Maribel, so much for being a part of our discussion today. It was wonderful to have you.
Wonderful to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. You just listened to Creative Friction. Please leave us a rate and review if you enjoyed the show. And if you want to learn more about Fearless Foundry or The Mead Company, go to our website at creativefriction.com.
All audio and video recordings are owned by Madeline Reeves and Jeff Mead and are recorded live every other Friday on LinkedIn and released once a month. Creative Friction is produced by Fina Valenzuela of Fearless Foundry. Music is by Premium Beats. Bye.